Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insights segment. I'm Harold Fisher. As reported earlier, Kevin Ward, the new mayor of the city of Hyattsville, committed suicide last night. City officials say the 44-year-old husband and father of two died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And just this week, it was revealed that Ian Alexander Jr., the 26-year-old son of actress Regina King, committed suicide on January 21st, just 2 days after his birthday. And once again, we find ourselves having the difficult and important conversation about suicide and mental health in our community. And tonight we have a panel to help us through this topic. Lisa Daughtry lost her son to suicide years ago. Also joining us, Brandon Johnson, public health advisor with SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Also joining us, Dr. Alfie Breland, psychologist and founder of the mental health nonprofit, the Acoma Project. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Certainly, we are going to be offering some resources for those of you who feel you may need help or know someone who needs help to address this difficult issue. I want to thank all of you for joining this conversation. Lisa, I want to start with you. You've been here before, not only on this program, but certainly having to address this space. And I appreciate your courage and your grace. But this one, it has to hit home in a particularly difficult way, simply because Regina King's son has a name that is so similar to your son's.
Yes, and I've had my son 2 years prior to her having her son, so my son would have been 28 this year. But yes, definitely, it hit home because I woke up to social media and I thought it was a joke. And then to research it more to find out that her son did die by suicide, it hit home because we have so much common ground with one another. And I would say, just from watching some videos, I mean, just not just our son having the first and middle name as the same, but we also had matching tattoos. It's just, it just was like, I know what she's going through right now. The unimaginable pain she's dealing with right now. I wouldn't want any other parent to deal with this.
Yeah, and to make sure that people understand specifically what we're talking about, as we said, Regina King's son's name is Ian Alexander Jr. Your son's name was Ian Alexander Daughtry.
Yes.
That is, it's just heart-wrenching to me.
Mm-hmm. It is, definitely.
I want to talk to Dr. Breland, because Dr. Breland, we were going to have this discussion prior to the death of Mayor Kevin Ward. And we were specifically going to touch on what parents go through when they lose a child, even in Regina King's case, an adult child to suicide. But Kevin Ward was an adult. He was 44 years old, and he was the parent of two adopted sons. He had a husband. We do not know the circumstances surrounding his life leading up to his death last night. But what kind of comes to mind when we look at the totality of these two high-profile deaths related to suicide?
A couple things. So one thing that comes to mind is, for those two that are very high-profile, there were so many other people who are impacted who will never know, including our sister, Ms. Daughtry, and her having lost her son. I have a girlfriend, a close girlfriend, Kathy Williams, who lost her son in high school when he was 17 to suicide. And his name is Torian Leandris Gray. So I'm always mindful of all the names and faces that we don't see. and always want to honor those families because this is difficult. I think the other thing that comes to mind for me, I was really thinking about this earlier, that I feel like is really important to say, and my brother Brandon can speak to this. Brandon and I know each other well and collaborate often. And that is, instead of asking the question I think many of us ask, which is what's mm-hmm. happening with black men, I think the question that always strikes me is, what are we not doing as a society to allow these men to feel that there is support out there for them? And so we talk about suicide as a preventable. I was on a call this morning, and someone that I was speaking with was very clear, suicide is preventable. Yes, there are things that we can do with the hopes that we can prevent, but I think it's important for people to know that, you know, we may not always be able to stop someone mm-hmm. completing a suicide. And I think what we can do, though, is provide as many supports, with a number one support to me being having conversations around mental health, mental wellness, and mental illness all the time and making it an integral part of our day-to-day lives. That helps people feel less alone. So those are the things that come to mind for me. And this issue of stigma, mental illness, and us as black people is really huge and is the overarching thing for me.
Brandon, how do we know when someone needs support?
Yes, there are a lot of different things that we are able to pick up on potentially if someone is struggling with their mental health and well-being. Oftentimes there can be levels of anger or frustration. As Dr. Breland Noble mentioned, oftentimes there are things outside of our control that may be happening to us that make us feel that we won't be able to get out of or move past the situation that we're in. So having those feelings and being frustrated and, you know, having signs of anger. Also, some individuals become isolated. They may turn to substance use and using that to cope with some of the things that they're feeling. And there can also be some verbal signs. People may say some things in jest about not wanting to be here, or in particular, maybe them feeling like they're a burden to themselves and to those who are around them. And so even those things that come out in jest sometimes, it's good and advantageous for us to sometimes probe a little deeper when we hear some of those things. So there can be a number of verbal and some physical signs that may give us some indication that something, you know, they may not be feeling 100% themselves. Mm-hmm.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about suicide and mental health in our community. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Of course, the latest news coming today, Kevin Ward, the new mayor of the city of Hyattsville, reportedly taking his own life last night. Kevin Ward just taking on the position as mayor on January 1st of this year. So it's a huge loss, not only for his family, but for the leadership of the city of Hyattsville. If you have a comment, if you have a question, certainly give us a call. One of the things, and Lisa, I'd like mm-hmm. you to talk about this, and also, you know, Dr. Afi, I'd like for you to kind of discuss this as well. When it's really, really difficult, I'm sure, Lisa, and you've spoken about this before, mm-hmm. Dealing with issues of what you don't know what you don't know, mm-hmm. and wondering how to not look back without guilt. How have you dealt with this over the years? I know it's been a process.
Mm-hmm. And wanting to speak about this anyway, it's like the ongoing struggles afterwards. For grieving this kind of death, we likely have questions even now, like with family, friends, and coworkers trying to put together the puzzle what happened to result their loved one's loss. And what they miss, like as you said, and they have no idea. For me, I stopped doing that, especially when I started going to therapy, because I didn't question myself as being a mother, being a parent to my son. I had to basically come to peace, and that's where I'm at now with my journey, with my life, is having peace in my life. And I always say initially in the beginning, where's your faith? Where's your faith? And one thing I didn't question is why God, why it had to happen to me. I know a lot of people have dealt with or are struggling with that, thinking that somehow God is basically placing this burden on them. We can't help what happens. Sometimes people don't understand that when a person is dealing with either thinking suicidal thoughts, they feel unworthy. They're depressed. You know, sometimes they feel like they're burdensome to their own friends, and that's what sometimes causes them to have irrational thoughts. You know, outside of their minds, and completely, they think it's rational to basically take the next step and to die by suicide. And so for me, I know my son was in a lot of pain. But what I stopped doing initially was stop blaming myself or saying I should have saw this sign, because sometimes we're not going to be able to pick up the signs. We're going to miss some warning signs. And some suicide behaviors only a trained professional can pick up.
And I think that's really an important thing, Dr. Alfie, because we may have instances where people take their own lives, and we wonder how does this happen, because we hear things like that person seems so happy, they had so much to live for, we just don't we don't understand it. And yet there are other people who may appear to be depressed chronically, but it's just their personality. They may just be low key, laid back, not particularly emotional, and we may look at them as lay people and wonder, you know, do they need help? And they may be fine. So how do you know, Dr. Alfie?
I think everything my sister just said, I can hear the peace in her voice, and it just makes my heart smile to know that she has worked hard to achieve that kind of peace. And I think people need to hear that, because I think the struggle is, like my girlfriend Kathy, people will say to themselves, I should have known, I should have known, I should have seen, I should have done something. And I think there are times when it's really difficult for us to know. Just as you both said, if you're not a trained professional, you may not know. But there are things that we can raise our consciousness and awareness of so that we can see those things that you don't necessarily need to be a trained professional to see. And one of those, I say, is paying attention to behavior over time. So you don't look for patterns. I tell parents all the time, if your child, like I'm in my home right now with my teenager, and my oldest teen is a very jovial, just a happy kid. And I always know when she doesn't feel well, because if everything changes, she gets very flat, and she kind of stays that way. And so I know that if I'm seeing that flat in her, I don't need to be a trained professional to understand those differences in my child's demeanor over time. So I've always tell people, look over a couple of weeks. If you're seeing that behavior over a period of weeks, then you want to step in. And I think also what I heard our sister say is something that Kathy has taught me, which is we can't stay in the space of I shoulda, woulda, coulda. I call that shooting on yourself. You can't. Mm-hmm. You cannot shoot on yourself, because if you had known better, I think almost any of us would have done better. So I think the key is looking forward and looking ahead is really trying to gain all the knowledge that we can about what are signs and symptoms that we need to pay attention to. But before you learn any of that, it is having enough open lines of communication and enough observational skills to pay attention to when you start to see that behavior change in your child or your loved one. You start to try to intervene at that time.
I'm going to take a break in a little bit, but before I do, Dr. Alfie, can you give us a couple of resources for people who are struggling with this issue, whether it be for themselves or possibly for loved ones? I want to make sure we put that out there before the break. And of course, these resources and others will be posted on our website on WHUR.com. As always, along with this entire podcast for this broadcast after 8:30. So go right ahead, Dr. Alfie.
Okay, so a couple. The Acoma Project, A-A, A as in kite, O-M-A, as you said, it will be on your site. Acoma Project is a resource to get information. Brandon has a podcast, a video podcast on YouTube called the Black Mental Wellness Lounge. Why is that important?
It's called what? Slow down for me, please. It's called what?
I'm sorry. I was trying not to mess up the break. The Black Mental Wellness Lounge. And he can speak more to that. I just want to make sure I put that out there. There's something called the Black Line, which is a hotline, which I just learned about this week, that is specifically designed with trained, culturally competent mental health professionals.
And what's that? How do you reach that? Is there a number?
Yeah, there's a number. I'll have to look it up and give it to you so you can put it on the site, but it's called the Black Line. They're on Twitter, and I'm sure if you Google them, you can probably find the 800 number, the Black Line.
Okay. I got to go to a break.
Yeah, go ahead.
We'll be back in just a bit. We're talking about suicide and mental health in our community. Stay with us. Jay calling from Maryland. Don't hang up. We're going to talk to you next. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM and 96.3 HD2, the app. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. We are talking about suicide and mental health in the Black community. My guests tonight are Brandon Johnson, Public Health Advisor with SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, Dr. Alfie Breland Noble. She is a psychologist and founder of the mental health nonprofit, the Acoma Project. Also, Lisa Daughtry, she lost her son to suicide. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jay calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good afternoon. Good evening. I'm sorry.
Go right ahead, please.
Yeah, I speak French. But, my problem is it's so difficult. It's true, but to cross that line is not easy. In 2010, I lost two houses in less than 4 months. They just called me, "Are you black?" I say, "Yes, I am." Even I was paying my mortgage, they locked me out from both of them in less than 4 months. It was so difficult for me, but I tried more than 5 times to take my life. But I don't know. I just hear some voice who say hope. But that hope I be thinking about it is so difficult. But to get back to my life until today is very, very hard. But when COVID-19 come right now, it's another disaster in my life. But I'm still praying.
Let me ask Dr. Alfie what she has to say about this, Jay, because you do bring up an interesting point about the impact of the pandemic on mental health. Dr. Alfie, your thoughts?
Yes. So the themes of isolation, separation, for those of us who are black, being stuck in the house, I would say other communities of color, being stuck in the house under quarantine and having to witness the challenges around social justice going on around us, in addition to not having access to some of the cultural touchstones in our community, physically going to church for people who are of faith, right? That's where we get replenished for the week ahead. And so when you lose all of that, you lose those connections, not being able to be with your loved ones physically over holidays and things like that, it weighs heavily because, like I said, for those of us who are black, those are the things that push us forward and help us keep going. You get replenished in those ways. So I would say absolutely the pandemic has had a significant negative impact on our mental health.
Any suggestion for Jay? I mean, I'm glad that you are with us, Jay, and that you are meeting the challenges of this issue. But we want you to stay with us. Any suggestion, Brandon, for people like Jay who are dealing with the challenges of the pandemic, who have come through suicide attempts and are still here and are winning the battle, but they're still in that battle?
Absolutely. There are a couple of resources. If you need something instantly, you want to get connected to someone, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is active. It's 24/7, 365.
Yes, hello.
1-800-273-8255. And that number later this year is transitioning to a three-digit number. That would be 988. It's not there yet, but soon it'll be transitioning into that. There's also a crisis text line that's available. Again, if you're in a crisis, so if you don't want to talk on the phone, crisis text line is available. If you text the word home to 741-741, those resources are available. And then from there, connecting to a mental health therapist or a counselor, and there are a number of organizations and places that are in place that are actually providing a few free therapy sessions to individuals right now. And a lot of that is around what Dr. Breland Noble was just describing. Some of the things that have come up from the pandemic, there are some resources there to help individuals. And I know Therapy for Black Men is one resource. They have a website if you Google their resource. I know the Acoma Project is doing this for young people. There are also the Boris L. Henson Foundation that Taraji P. Henson started is also providing some free therapy sessions to individuals across the country. So people are recognizing that this is a challenge, understanding that right now we're in this moment and we want to have as many resources for folks as possible. And so those are some of the resources if you need something more immediate. And we definitely want individuals tapped into some mental health therapists, especially those that look like them, because they do can provide better outcomes.
Well, Jay, we wish you the very best and continued good mental health. And thank you so much for participating in the conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about suicide and mental health in our community. If you have a comment or if you have a question, give us a call. I did want Brandon to continue as we talk about this issue concerning the pandemic in great ways and small. I think we all have been impacted by it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dr. Afi talked about isolation, but some people were feeling something like that, Brandon, prior to the pandemic, and COVID-19 only exacerbated that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There, like, we know that there have been impacts specifically around the pandemic. Even some of the data that we collected at SAMHSA, in looking at adults that are above the age of 18, for those in 2020 who had serious thoughts of suicide, around 22% of them said that they had serious thoughts of suicide because of the COVID-19 pandemic specifically, right? So we're talking like 2.5 million people. And looking at in our community and what's happened, and looking at the CDC data from 2020, there was an overall decrease in suicides in 2020. But if you look a little deeper at the data, what it shows us is that for the African American community, specifically Black men, that rate went up. It went up in Hispanic males, it went up in American Indian Alaska Natives, and it went up in Black males. So when we're looking at this, and Dr. Alfie did, you know, such a great job outlining this, from the pandemic to economic issues to all the other things that were happening at the beginning of the pandemic with, you know, the civil unrest and racial injustices in the country. When you look at these, you know, these are things that have compounded issues, and there are so many systemic things, as the brother was just talking about, whether it be housing, whether it be finances, whether it be relationships, we know that these things impact us. And we may not always feel comfortable sharing just how much they're impacting us. And so we do know that there are, you know, these challenges, these extra weights that we are carrying on top of us because of the pandemic, which is why it's so important for the conversation to be out loud, to be strong, and to have forums like this to really connect people with these resources, because these are real.
Lisa, what have you been able to share with other parents to help them through similar difficulties after the loss of your son?
It's just funny. After the news of Regina King's son died by suicide, I had a girlfriend reach out to me because a friend of hers' daughter was having issues in an attempt to take her life. And so I basically, as usual, I mean, you have a 24-hour lifeline, which is a national suicide prevention lifeline, and that's available 24 hours, 7 days a week. But other things that I pointed out to her was support your child when this initial, when you start seeing behavior change, or if, for example, they attempt to try to take their life. But ask them what is triggering them so that they can talk about it. And as I always tell parents, don't be judgmental. Don't just sort of be passe about, oh, but you'll get over it, you'll be okay. We have to address it so that they can have open dialogue with us, with the family, with friends, with coworkers. Another thing is unplug with your loved ones. I mean, let's get off social media for a minute. Let's not take phone calls, texting, you know. Let's just spend some quality time with each other. I think that help us as far as trusting this is our support. You know, our family is our support right now. So this giving us time to now I can open up and, hey, let me go talk to mom. Let me go talk to dad, or let me go talk to my uncle. You know, someone who is, you feel is a not only a support for you, but someone that you can confide into. And then next, be consistent with asking your child, how was your day? Are you okay? Sometimes we'll say, oh, you know, 2 weeks ago she wasn't okay. She had stomach problems, so whatever. And then you don't say anything else. You just, you know, your child comes in from coming to the house and do their everything. You don't, you never know what's going on when they go into their room. But sit down and have that time and say, hey, how was your day? And you'll be amazed. Sometimes they'll open up. Sometimes, you know, it's going to take time, but be consistent with asking them, how are you doing?
Dr. Alfie, I know that we were supposed to let you go. Do you have a few more minutes, or do we have to let you go at this moment? Dr. Alfie?
I'm sorry, I'm here. I was supposed to have a patient call, but she hasn't called me yet, so I will definitely let you know.
Okay, thank you so much. I thought we had already lost you at the moment. My question, which kind of piggybacks on what Lisa was saying, is the thought that your child may be considering not even having attempted, but considering suicide is terrifying. How do you support your child who's talking about this kind of thing without kind of losing it yourself, without panicking?
Yeah. So I think the reality is we don't have to do anything, but I want us to be aware as parents, as our sister just said, that this is a reality, that there are things, she mentioned social media, that our young people have things in their lives. I'm Generation X, that we never had in our lives. And so they are faced with pressures that we can't necessarily understand. And I think the first step for all of us, always, people always think it's the tools that you need that are the first. It's not the tools. we have to be prepared to use the tools. And so I think it really has to begin with how comfortable are we as parents with our own conversations around mental health, with checking in with ourselves. And so if we demonstrate and model that mental health is important to us, then our kids see it. My kids, they hate it, but they know how to meditate because they watch me meditate from the time that they could, like, walk and talk. They know how important it is to me, partly because it's my profession, but also because I want to practice what I preach. And so I think it can be terrifying. And, yes, you can be internally terrified. At the same time, I'm going back to what our sister just said. We have a duty as parents and caregivers. It's not all of us are biological parents to our children, but as caregivers and the adults in these young people's lives, to be present for them, to check in with them. Everything that she said, I won't repeat it. And so I think it starts with we have to take care of ourselves. If we're better cared for, we can do a better job of being present and accountable to our children. And so in some ways, we kind of don't have time to be horrified by the fact that our children may be thinking about, a lot of kids have passive suicidal ideation. It's just passive. I don't feel like dealing with this stuff anymore. If I wasn't here, stuff would be easier. And so we can't allow ourselves to get stuck in that. We have to get stuck in the idea that as long as I have open lines of communication with my child, which is what we found through our research at the ACOMA Project, the families that have better and more open lines of communication, those are the children who are going to fare better, because you can always be in a position to spot when things are not going well.
How common is passive suicidal ideations and with anyone? And how much should a parent worry about it if it is common at all? I mean, if it is something that is common but never acted upon, and even a passing thing.
So I'll yield to Brandon. I'm sure Brandon can answer that. What I will say, just as a little footnote, is that I think what's important to recognize is that, Pat, one thing we want to do, if we're concerned about a person, whether or not it's passive or active suicidal ideation, one of the key things to do is to be prepared to ask the question, the key question, is there any part of you that no longer wants to live, right? And you have to be able to open your mouth and ask the question directly, and then you have to be prepared to hear whatever answer that child is going to come back with. And if they come back with, yes, there is a part, then you ask, if I leave you alone, will you be safe? It's just a check-in question. If they tell you no, then you keep pushing. Okay, what's your plan? What would you do? And if they're really actively suicidal, they can articulate all of it. And many times, they will. But I think the key is, which I learned from my girlfriend, Kathy, you can't shy away from those questions. But I will let Brandon, and I can't hear him, by the way, so I will yield to Brandon about the prevalence of passive suicidal ideation. I think he probably knows that.
Go ahead, Brandon, please.
Absolutely. So for adults, if we're looking at adults around, you know, maybe 4.9% of the population may have serious thoughts of suicide. So we're talking around 12.2 million individuals, and this is self-reported. And so around like the age range where we see the highest percentage is around this 18 to 25 age group. So it's this transitional age youth is what we call them. So from the data that we have from SAMHSA, that's kind of where we see this. And it's around 5.3 million people who have serious thoughts of suicide between the ages of 26 and 49. So it's definitely something that I think is more prevalent than what we know and what we tend to talk about, right? And so, but it is something that millions of Americans deal with and are faced with on a year-to-year basis. And I think for us in engaging with our children and giving them that open space, as both of my other panelists mentioned, giving them that open space, being able to have individuals talk without judgment, without, you know, minimizing, you know, what they're dealing with is all important, because we just never know. Many people that we come across may have had these thoughts, but we want to just make sure that we're able to act, give them, what I tell parents is give them that safe space to land. So if they don't want to talk to you today, make sure that they know when they do, or if they do feel up to talking, that they know that you are a place that they can really talk to and go in and about these thoughts and feelings and emotions.
I do have a question about this, and this kind of goes back to what Dr. Alfie said. And I really appreciate the question, and I think it's so important. If I leave you alone, are you going to be safe?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that is such the perfect question, but the answer that you receive is the thing that may be concerning to me, because if a child or a friend or a relative or an adult or what have you says yes, but they're not telling the truth because they truly want to carry out a suicide attempt, how do you address that? They may say, I'm going to be safe, and then you leave them alone and they're not, as opposed to saying no, because they don't want you to protect them or save them from their own designs on themselves.
I think there's a part of the conversation where we have to acknowledge that we can only do what we work on. We can only control what we can control. And so I think if your gut is telling you they're lying, they're not going to be safe. But I remember, you're not asking this question in isolation. You're asking this question because somebody's giving you a lot of stimuli to give you the idea that it's a question that you need to ask. And so if you're asking that question and you have all these other signals, right? So educating ourselves and raising our awareness about signs and symptoms, that's important, because if all those signs and symptoms are there, they're meeting, checking 9 out of 10 boxes, but you're sitting with them and they say, no, I'm fine. Your gut is telling you no, because you had a reason for asking in the first place. So I think in those instances, I think it's okay to say to the person, I'm still worried, I'm still concerned, and I want to stay here with you, I want to be here with you until I see in you that, you know, you feel safe, because I'm just not seeing it. So it's not being argumentative, but I do think we can't run away from the idea that we've got to be willing to ask and we've got to be prepared for the answer, and we have to have a plan for what we would do. And the one thing I tell parents all the time, again, this is something I learned from Kathy, if that child tells you they can't keep themselves safe, and if they have a plan, your next step is the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just point blank period. You just need to be willing to go. Not the police station, right, which is sometimes how we manage mental health in this country. Go to the ER, because you want that child to have an evaluation. And I always say this. Mm-hmm. I'll say this one thing. You would rather have a live, angry child because you went against their wishes and took them to the ER than a child that you were trying to placate, and something happens to your child because you were trying to make them happy and didn't want to take them to the ER. It's okay for them to be mad. They're mad in that hospital bed, alive, waiting to get the kind of care that's really going to ultimately help them.
Mm-hmm. I want to be respectful, Dr. Alfie, of your time regarding your patient, and so we are going to allow you to get yourself together so that you can provide the best services for a patient that you are waiting to meet with. So I want to
thank you
very, very much for your insight and your training and your thoughtfulness in dealing with this really difficult and delicate topic. So thank you so much.
I appreciate y'all. Thank you so much. And you know, you're doing a wonderful service by being here. Thank you, sister. I'm so sorry for your loss. And you all take care.
Thank you so much. I did want to bring up another issue with you, Brandon. Obviously, we know that suicide can happen for any family. Anyone can take their own life. The irony, I think, in that this particular case with Lisa's loss, which was years ago. How many years has it been now, Lisa?
It would be 10 this year.
Yeah, I thought so. It's been a decade. And your son was, 18. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
He was 18. Regina King's son was 26. And Kevin Ward was 44. But in each of the cases that we're discussing tonight, we're talking about black men. Brandon, if you could at least, you know, touch on a little bit about perhaps how we can address this issue, approach this issue, and save some lives concerning black men. I suspect, and you can tell me because you're the expert, that approaching this issue with black men requires a different kind of sensitivity and finesse.
Absolutely. It's definitely something that is a challenge. I mentioned the statistic earlier about the suicide rate of black men increasing last year. And as we dive into this, there is still so much stigma around black men being able to be vulnerable. For so long in so many different spaces, you know, on our jobs, whether we're, you know, engaging in different systems that have not always been safe for us, it's been important for us to not show our feelings and emotions and our vulnerabilities, because that's what protected us. We had to present and be strong, right? We had to be, you know, we had to be tough. We couldn't be, you know, show those cracks in the armor that we have to wear on a day-to-day basis for a number of things and all the things that we are supposed to be, and I'm using air quotes, supposed to be for all people. We often didn't feel that we could tap into them. And so for a long time, I think for us and speaking as a black man.
I think if we can get him back, because I definitely want to make sure that it's important that we hear what he has to say. But to that point, Lisa, as the mother of a young black man, I'm sure you have some thoughts about that as well.
Yeah, what I want to say, because I've been a mental health advocate for 10 years, and one thing is the language. Yes.
Yeah, okay, hold on for a second, Lisa. Please go right ahead, Brandon, finish your thought. Mm-hmm. You dropped out.
I'm sorry, I don't know where I dropped
Go right ahead, though.
Yeah, I just feel that we haven't had the opportunities to really engage with our emotions because of society and how we're always supposed to be strong. So I think one way to address this is to give us safe spaces with other black men who have been vulnerable and feel that they can express that, to really start to break down some of the walls. Because I think it's interesting, I tell people often when I'm you know, working with brothers and being around brothers, that it's interesting that we'll all be going through the same thing or something similar, but we feel like we can't talk about it. But why not? We're all in the same space. We're all experiencing the same things, the same pressures, the same challenges. And so if we can get to a space of, if a couple brothers feel good enough and good enough in where they are to address those things and talk about it and create that open dialogue, we can really connect brothers to engaging in those emotions that we've oftentimes been told will make us weak and make us vulnerable in the eyes of other people.
Go right ahead, Lisa. Please continue your point.
I would say language matters as well, because we have been using the word commit suicide, and really, as a mental health advocate and as Brandon, a mental health professional, we use the terminology die by suicide, and we must be intentional by changing the way we speak. And that's partially the problem, the language. Asking how could someone do this, put the responsibility on the victim, just as a phrase, commit suicide suggests as almost a criminal intent. And this is why mental health professional advocates usually employ the terms die by suicide, as it removes the guilt from the person who has lost their life and allow the discussion about the disease or disorder for which they've been suffering.
Well, I do want to thank you both for, you know, taking a moment to share with us, because this is, has been a difficult, you know, week, certainly, and a difficult day for the city of Hyattsville, for Kevin Ward's family, for Regina King's family this week. and for those whose names we do not know, mm-hmm. who are perhaps, you know, suffering in silence, in relative obscurity, but the lives of those loved ones who have been lost to suicide are no less important. And so I do want to thank all of my guests, Lisa Daughtry, Brandon Johnson, and of course, Dr. Alfie Breland Noble, for talking about this. And as I said, those resources will be on our website as well as this podcast after 8:30. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, January 26, 2022. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.